Yes. Hey, everybody. We're back. It's us. It's your friends. Your friends in the podcasting world. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
And you guys are listening to Carolyn and Joe! Hey, Carolyn. How you doing?
How you doing?
How you doing? How you doing? How you doing? How
doing
you doing?
Phenomenal.
Ciao. Ciao. Ciao.
Insert adjective here.
So, ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, my name is Joe Carabello. I am definitely a filmmaker. I'm definitely a writer. And I'm also a photographer. I'm definitely in the band Monday Mistress. But today I'm a podcaster. And across from me is one of the greatest people, artists, creators, human beings, aliens I've ever met in my whole entire life. Her name is Karen Bilewski. How you doing, Carolyn?
I'm doing good.
Great.
Am I an alien?
In another planet, you're an alien. We're all aliens, aren't we?
It's an interesting way to look at that.
That's the only way I can look at things. So what do we have? What do we have for
today,
this week's edition?
We have a special treat you're about to listen to. It is the live audio recorded at AwesomeCon 2016 of the panel that you put together, Joe. It's called Awesome Filmmakers Making It Happen.
That's right. That is true. A lot of people have been waiting. They've been hounding me. They've been knocking down my door, burning everything down, basically trying to get me to
They're like,
post
give me
this.
My podcast.
When are you going to post this Awesome Filmmakers panel, Joe? This Awesome Filmmakers panel has Otessa Goddard, Drew Boldick, Kevin Sampson, Cooney Owe, and Jay Jameson, and which I still incidentally call Calvin. This is one of the greatest panels for filmmakers that I've ever put together, and it's probably going to keep on getting better every single year. But this is one of the great panels in which you can find out firsthand from the perspective of filmmakers, people who are making films, making things happen. That's what it's about. Awesome filmmakers making things happen. And these people, these guys, including myself, but I can't exactly just go and cast myself in my own panel.
Well, you did serve as moderator.
Moderator.
And organizer.
Liaison to the senior partners, as if they say, but I feel like I'm still definitely qualified. But that's for what I do, is I like giving the opportunity. And this is a great opportunity for everyone to... And there was a lot of people in this audience, and I was really happy.
And not
there's
only
always that,
that
fear, but there's
know,
a lot.
I know that this is audio, but you guys did show a secret clip.
That's true. We showed a lot of stuff that we're not even allowed to show or to have played here.
Or on the internet.
Or on the internet or anything like that. So we had those exclusives that you had to be there.
Yeah, so I just want to throw that out there that, you know, we're probably going to be doing panels at AwesomeCon in the future. I don't know, you know, I don't know the details. I can't look into my crystal ball, but when I do look into the future in my vision, I do see us doing more panels with AwesomeCon. So get it in your head now to actually attend these panels, so then you can actually be a part of all the exclusive stuff that happens live.
Exclusive. We're all about the exclusives. We're all about those moments in which you have to be there in person.
But for now, I guess you guys can just enjoy the Q&A of Awesome Filmmakers Making It Happen. We can't show those special clips and all that. So,
and
you just got to enjoy what you have here.
I would say, again, this is such a great panel. It's different from what happened last year because you have different people. But everything that you guys hear from Otessa, Kevin, Cooney, from Drew, from Jay, all such insightful creators, insightful people who make things. This isn't just people who say they do stuff like once a year or something like that. These guys are constantly creating stuff, and it was such a great format. It's such a great panel for people to ask questions and just hear what's on their minds about the impressions about the good stuff, the bad stuff, you know, the realities of making movies, and such a crucial thing to be happening. And I'm so happy there was such an awesome turnout there, you know, spending the nightlife with us over at AwesomeCon.
And also the subtitle, I feel like, is really important. Making It Happen. So it's like the panel's called Awesome Filmmakers, but then it's like Making It Happen because you guys are actually legit making stuff.
Yeah.
So that is what indeed, in fact, makes you a filmmaker.
Absolutely. That is crucial. I was a big fan of this. Listening to it and then being part of it, I was really happy with everything came out. And there's no other thing that we can do right now other than to introduce this. I can just say this above ahead of time. We kept it good. We kept it as good as we possibly can. You know, they gave us the rating, but we followed it through.
Yeah, it was a PG-13 rating.
But the insightfulness is beyond.
Yes.
You guys will learn so much from this panel.
Your brains will grow.
You will be motivated. You will be inspired, intimidated, entertained. And you guys just go out there. Take the time. I want to thank you ahead of time for listening to this panel. So once again.
All right, let's go.
Let's go. Awesome Filmmakers, make it happen live at AwesomeCon 2016. Rock and roll, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, hey, Joe.
Love it.
Hey. My name is Joe Carveo. I'm the moderator of this panel, and it's pretty awesome. I don't know if you guys were here. Any of you were here last year for the Awesome Filmmakers panel? Then you guys who have not been, you're in for an absolute treat, because these are some of the best filmmakers in this area, in the world.
The 50 mile radius. 50 mile radius. Nothing beyond the 50. Just 50.
I'm going to start from our left here, far left. He is the producer and director of the Picture Lock Show and awesome person in general, Mr. Kevin Sanson.
Yeah!
Next to him, he's worked, I guess, are we still saying that he's worked with James Cameron? Can we say that still?
Sure.
He worked with James Cameron, everybody. We all say he's... He's a great cinematographer, he's a working cinematographer, he is the realest guy in, if you guys, he is the reason why we were placed in the sort of the PG-13 era, if you guys listened last year, he'll drop it hard, man.
Like a deuce or something? Like a hot stinking deuce?
Is that? He's definitely the guy why we get in trouble, but I wanted to have him back.
Nice.
Mr. Kumitari Obi. Again, you guys saw the trailer for his new feature film, Try. He's also a gentleman of many, 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 many awesome skills, Mr.
Where are you going with that? I don't know.
Mr. Jay Jameson. I like this dude all the way in the back with the red. He's like, I got to do his last chair.
Yeah.
The president and founder of the DC Web Fest, and also you saw some clips. Was that a trailer? Did you call that a trailer?
Just a sizzle reel. Some scenes that were part of, I did a web series for 7 seasons, the longest continually running web series, and that was when we were the official nominee of the Webbies, that was the submission reel that we submitted. So I thought it was a good kind of potpourri, if you will.
Miss Tessa Gadar. And I feel like I'm going to mess up your last name. Should I just go for it?
Just go for it.
I've been watching this guy. This guy is making films through, I don't know how many years, but he makes the most wildest and, it messes up your brain, but it makes you happy at the same time. Dangerous filmmaker, Mr. Drew Bolduc.
Good answer.
So,
at least in Family Feud.
I'm sorry, man. So pretty much,
potato salad.
The main thing of what this panel is all about, it's so weird, I'm just up there, but what this panel is all about is basically, it's not for us the filmmakers. Why am I doing that? It's not for us the filmmakers, but it's basically for the people out here who want to realize the reality, they want to know the reality of making movies in today's world. And what's really cool is we have, everyone here comes from a different background of filmmaking. They all make different types of films, and they all have a different idea of what films can or can't be. That's why I think this year's lineup is pretty volatile. That's the best word I can describe. Thank you, Kim. So pretty much, just like last year, I'm gonna start this panel with the same question, and we'll just go down the line. We'll start with Drew. What is pretty much the biggest challenge when it comes to making filming? What comes to making films?
Wow.
Jeez.
Well, the first challenge was that you never thought you'd have to deal with.
That's an even harder question.
What was the first one? What's the most challenging?
What's the most challenging that you've had to experience?
I mean, every project's different.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, money, it's sort of balancing time and money and whatever the thing that you actually want to do is. And depending on what the project is, because I started in like no budget cinema. So my first movie, The Taint, was like a $5,000 movie. And then after that, I did Science Team, which is the thing with the flamethrower, which is like a $15,000 movie. And then recently, Kunian shot a movie that I did called Assassinat. And that was like it ended up being like a $300,000 movie. And the job of directing is sort of the same, regardless of what the budget is. But even if the budget's really big, you're still kind of balancing the time that you have to shoot something and then the money that you have. And then you're trying to make something good. So that's sort of the job of a director on every movie. And then I guess tell a story at the same time, I guess. That's part of it.
It's at the same time is always a tough part.
Yeah.
Yeah. So about you, Tessa?
So I would say that I have somewhat of a similar origin story, coming from super micro, no budget, indie web series since about like 2006. And one of the biggest challenges that I always found was that we don't have the benefit of a 5-year contract. So every year you're trying to get the same people back year after year, which is often very difficult, especially when you're working with youth as I was. So you kind of feel like you are constantly running for office. You know, just the campaigning never stops to make sure that you are always bringing people back in and selling them on an experience. So, yeah, I would say the feeling that you are constantly up for re-election and the terror, but also wonderful feeling of success when you pull it off, that is one thing. I would say that in terms of... And this is a PG-13 panel, so it's a good thing. In terms of, like, specifically...
Definitely did.
In terms of specific things that have happened on set that, you know, you never really expect that you're going to have to deal with. We once had a flasher show up on set.
Nice.
So I learned how to deal with that, if anyone wants to know. That you make as big of a scene as possible and point all fingers in that particular direction. And then... that was very successful. So yeah, that's a specific example and a general example of what I would say about, you know, the trials and tribulations.
What about you, Jay?
Yeah. Almost called me Calvin. I think Drew touched on its resources. Filmmaking is not the cheapest artistic expression that's out there. And you have to pull in cast and crew, and even if you people work for free, you're still monopolizing their time. So it's just resources in general. So gathering the right team and resources to do what you want to do is difficult. I started off making, you know, just random films with my friends, camera and no lights and the onboard microphone and all that. And then it was fun, and you could knock it out with a very small team and execute a vision and do something fun. But then once you start collaborating with people who are know what they're doing, when you start collaborating with cinematographers, you know, I started working with Cooney, and Cooney started shooting stuff. I'm like,
it's all very incestuous. Sorry.
It's very incestuous. Yeah. Like a lot of us up here have worked together on many projects. But like once you start seeing how pretty things can be, when you have those resources, it's hard to go back to just doing the one camera with your friends type thing. Like once you start working with real actors who are really good and not just like someone who's comes on to an audition off of Craigslist and does a super long science fiction monologue for your family drama. It's
that happened.
That happened. Oh. And that happened for Anthony Samuels.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can find really good people through Craigslist. Though.
You can. Yeah. No, yeah. You definitely can. But it's a little bit. It's you know, working with a casting director. It's a little bit like you've got to work through the weeds and whatnot. But you can. You absolutely can. But like once you start working with professionals and people who are passionate, it's hard to go back. So that's the thing where it's like, you know, you want to constantly make stuff, but you also don't have necessarily always have the resources or wherewithal to make as much stuff as you want to be making. So I think that's a really difficult aspect of this.
I don't know. I'm in between microphones, so
yeah.
Should probably just do double microphones.
Just double, yeah. Yeah. Press conference, baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, wow, it is pretty loud.
It's interesting, like from your perspective, since now from a cinematographer side.
Yeah, it's a little different. I think the main greatest challenge for me personally as a technician, technically I'm below the line, sometimes above the line, depending on how much creative freedom I have.
What does that mean for people who don't know about the line?
Above the line is like writers, producers, directors, so people who are like the head creative aspects of the filmmaking. That they're above the line, and they get paid mucho dinero. Sometimes. And then you have the technicians who are, you know, the gaffer who's like the head of the electrical department, DP, I'm head of the camera, electrical and grip department. You have key grip, which is the head of the grip department that puts the stands where the lights go on. And then you have like the second tier, you have the best boys who are like the second in command of all that kind of stuff. Well, anyway, so it just all trickles down. That's below the line right there. So the hardest part as a below the line crew member, or I mean, I get a little bit more creative freedom, but for the most part, it's me trying to find the perfect project or a project that I gravitate towards. So, you know, it's harder because I don't make my own content. I pretty much am, you know, in service to other people's projects. So it makes it harder in a sense for me because I have to go scour and scrounge and really take an analysis of like each individual projects and how to weigh the pros and cons of each of them. So it's like, okay, how much money does this project have? How much creative freedom do I have for this project? Is this project something that I feel confident enough in doing and feeling good about it at the end of the day? So, you know, it sounds a little weird because you're thinking it's like, oh, it's a creative thing, but it's also a money thing. It's a lot of different aspects, both technical, professional, practical, pragmatic elements to it. So, yeah, like you got to find the project that speaks to you but also pays the bills so that you can actually do a decent job of it so you can get rehired again. So that's the hardest thing, finding a project that's not awful.
What about you, Kevin?
I think as a director, producer, writer, kind of like Kuni was just saying, I'm a control freak, and so learning to let go. As to not repeat what anybody else has said, it's like if you don't have the resources, but then you have to wear plenty of different hats, it can become a little difficult to see your vision get, you know, come to fruition. So sometimes it's a matter of, as you were saying, you gotta link up with the people that you know. Part of, you know, as Jay was saying, like we went to grad school together. So part of going to grad school was more so about networking. And
I didn't go to grad school.
No, for me. Oh, and him. Probably. For me. It's more so about the network and, you know, meeting different people. And then you find the people that kind of share your vision that you can work with. But I think, just in terms of if you're working with a low budget, a lot of times it's difficult sometimes being a politician. I just didn't think I'd have to do that much work.
Hey guys.
So let me see out of like just who here is a filmmaker or works on films? Just raise your hands.
Or interested in possibly working on a film.
All right, cool.
In some capacity.
All right. That was like a slow, like slowly was like maybe.
I'm surprised that many people are interested in working on
films. That's a good amount. So, like, pretty much, say, like, one more question. I'm just going to sort of open the floor to let you guys ask anything you actually want to these guys. But the next question I have, pretty much at this point, is what do you guys actually consider, like, a success? Like, a success when it comes to a project? I'll just start with, Tessa, I'll start with you.
That is okay. Such a...
Oh, when I look back, I think something of which I am the most proud, and I'm just going to bring this back to the new media, because that's really where I cut my teeth, as it were. When I was in grad school, as my part of my thesis, I really wanted to do something that was web series based. You know, everyone was always talking about the decline of the box office, and just they left it at that. And meanwhile, I was like, you know what, I see this shift in how we're accessing stories. And I also see a need for, you know, it's rare, I think, for us to look up on the screen and sometimes see ourselves and see our stories. I think that the margins have become most of the page. So I really wanted to do a web series. And my thesis board was like, and again, this is like 2006. They're like, absolutely not. You want to make something for, you know, and put it on for free on the internet. That's a terrible idea. You're a lunatic. We don't like this. Rethink it. And so instead, I went back and I created a business plan and showed, you know, kind of what I saw trends for viewership being and what I projected for the future. And at that point, they were like, okay, well, we still think you're a lunatic, but this business plan works. So, okay, we'll let you do your thesis as a web series. And I think that when all of the kind of future forecasting ended up happening, A, it's wonderful to feel like you're not just this lunatic raving in front of Radio Shack. You know, like you're like, there was something there and I felt it and other people felt it too. So that was a triumph. But I think also just being able to tell stories that often don't get told, that always feels like a triumph, you know? So I would say that's like a very sort of broad answer, but I would say that I really like the democratization of media that I see in my industry. That is a triumph, not just for me, but for everyone. I mean, certainly when you win awards and things like that, all of these things are triumphs that you feel really great about. And I wrote a textbook about how to make a web series when there wasn't any textbook for that. So that was something else that I felt really proud about. But I think really, at the end of the day, it's the democratization of media that I think is something that we can all be the most proud of.
I think for me, it's being able to make the next thing. And part of that is your whether or not it finds an audience and it's able to make money and then people can show that you're a marketable filmmaker and they'll give you money to make another film, or even if it's you make something that's interesting enough to bring in those resources, people who will want to work with you because they like what you've done and they want to collaborate and they want to And they want to help you make the next thing. They're interested in working with you. Like, that's, again, you know, going back to the collaboration that I had before, we all kind of know each other from or a lot of us know each other from this thing called Project Resolution, which was in Richmond. Joe used to host it, and Drew hosted it. Do you still host it?
Someone else kind of took it over, but we restarted it.
Yeah, we restarted it.
It's happening now.
Yeah, so back in the day, it was... it was this thing where you could just show up and show short films. And you had other filmmakers, you had audience, like you had random people from off the street who would watch your films. And a lot of us met each other there and we would see, you know, I saw one of Cooney's films. And I was like, I really want my next film to look like that. And so then we worked together on a movie. And that was, you know, so because he liked the films that I had done. So it was like, that was something that I felt like, what?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I did. I genuinely like. I'm not bullshitting you.
How do we know that's true?
How do we know that's true? No. So I felt like those early films were a success in that sense, you know, because they found an audience, they helped make the next thing. And then that constantly pushes you forward so that you can eventually make a living making media, because you're able to show that you can find an audience and you can make effective films. And as part of that, like going back to the Project Resolution thing, I think the second half of that is finding your audience and making, for me, the success is, does my audience get what I'm trying to do? Like, is it an effective thing? If I'm trying to make them cry, does the audience cry? Do they laugh at the joke? And one of the things that I think is important for upcoming filmmakers is to watch your movies with an audience. Not just put something up on Facebook or YouTube or Vimeo or whatever. And, you know, you can get 100,000 views and people could say, oh, I like it, but you don't know what they like. You don't know what part of it they're responding to. If you sit in an audience and watch someone watch your movie, there's a vibe you can feel. If it's a comedy, you know what's working and what's not working because you can literally hear them laugh or not. And so then you can take that and make your next film based on that knowledge. It's like building a stand-up set almost. Like you're able to see what in your movie and what in your work is connecting with an audience and what isn't. And that's why movies do test screenings, and because you're in the edit suite with your editor, and you're like, oh, this is great, and then you go watch it with an audience, and literally the audience doesn't even have to say anything. You don't have to wait for the card. You can sit there and say, oh wow, why is this shot so long? Like it's just something about seeing it with the audience. So I would, you know, up and coming filmmakers, try. I mean, put stuff on YouTube, put it on Vimeo, but try your best to find a place to screen your movies for an audience. So you can see what's working and what's not.
I'm gonna piggyback off you, actually. Nice. So I like to do a two-tier thing. First off, as an addendum, Drew makes films in Richmond. Joe used to go to VCU, and he used to make movies in Richmond. Calvin lives in Richmond. Sorry, Jay works.
I have two names.
Yes, he's got multiple names. So, anyways, he's based in Richmond. He works all around, but you know, same thing. And I used to go to school in Richmond and lived in Richmond for a couple years. And we developed a really, I mean, I wouldn't say like tight knit, but like everybody knew each other, and there was a sense of community in terms of like filmmaking, and everybody kind of went and saw each other's movies. So, you know, that's how. But at the same time, like over time, you know, due to the fact that we workshopped with each other and pissed each other off, which drived us to make better films. And now we're all, you know, one way or another, professionals. So, you know, and we're all working all over the country because of that. So, you know, if there's a way to foster that within the Northern Virginia, D.C. metro area, that'd be great. I'm just saying that that's something that people should strive for. And then also, in terms of what is a successful feeling when it comes to filmmaking, it's like same thing with an audience thing. I remember the feature that I worked on before Assassinat got into a bunch of really good festivals, and some are small, some are bigger. And one time I was down with the director and producer in Sarasota, Florida, and had a fantastic film festival. It's like one of the best in the country. But like, you know, it's a lot of people who are attending the festival as filmmakers, but also there's a lot of people who are local to the Sarasota area that come in and watch the films. And we weren't really concerned with the other filmmakers because they were as arty and as pretentious as us. But like at a certain point, right after one of the screenings, like me, the director and producer were all just sitting down having like a pasta dinner or whatever. And this like group of older women who are in their 60s and 70s, or you know, 50 to 70s, they came up to us and said, like, we watched your movie and we felt really connected with it. And it's about a woman who goes through a crisis of faith, and you know, she becomes a weird female monk of sorts. So a lot of the women who lived that life or lived that kind of feeling of isolation and disillusionment came up to us and said we really connected it. And one person even said, I cried. And if anything else, I mean, that's a very throwaway kind of line, but like I felt really gratified by that. And I feel like that's a success when I can, even if I'm just a camera guy, I can find a way to contribute that and make somebody feel something to the point that they actually exhibit that emotion externally instead of just compartmentalizing, internalizing it. I feel like that's a success.
What about you, Drew?
I definitely think, you know, I've had, you know, sometimes like, it's like a one-on-one basis where like someone will see it, say something to you. They'll be like, the science team, it was this weird movie, because it's like weird genre movie. A guy, it was like, came up to me and was like, that movie really helped me. And it wasn't for like a good reason. It was because there's this guy in the movie who has like anger problems, and he like destroys everything in a room, and it's like 2 minutes of violence. But it's, I guess it's funny. I don't really know. It could be seen as funny. But he was like, yeah, like seeing a guy that angry like really helped me, because I have like anger issues myself. And that's a movie that is much more harder to know if an audience likes it. Like, I've played that movie in an audience, and it's gotten, like, a standing ovation. I've also played it for audiences that just sit there, and they stare at the screen, and they're like, I don't know what the fuck this is. What are we watching? Is this a joke? I don't know. So like when I
describe what Science Team is for some people, what they at least.
I mean, it's a science fiction movie about a guy who goes, he breaks up with his girlfriend, he goes home to live with his mom, and then there happens, there's like an alien that's living in the house, and then this like a government organization comes to like take care of the alien or whatever. But it's somewhere between a comedy and a trauma movie and a weird psychological drama to where I don't, yeah, I made it, I don't even really know what it is. And, I mean, honestly, you can see that with audiences. Like, some of them get it, like, hard. Like, I've shown it's like, an audience of, like, mostly, like, 40-plus, you know, middle-aged people, and they just, they dug it, you know? They like the stupid jokes that no one else got. It shows a younger audience, and they just never hit. So there is something to that. I mean, if you're trying to make, like, a four-quadrant movie or whatever that appeals to everybody, you know, screenings, test screenings work. But also, if you're making weirder stuff, which I'm not necessarily saying you should do, sometimes it's harder to know if it works or not. But when I started, I wanted to be like a comedy writer. And so I was always going for the jokes. And so like the first thing I ever did that I consider a success was I just made a movie, and it was, I come from making really offensive movies, that's where I started. And it was like about an abortion, it was like a coat hanger abortion story. It was like a short film. And somehow it's a comedy. It shouldn't have been. It was just this idea I had, I got, and I was like, I gotta make it. And I made it, and we played it, and it just killed. Like, people laughed at every moment. And it's like the highest high I've ever had. Because it's like you finally make something that like communicates, because when you make a movie, it's like you make a little machine that can communicate to like a ton of people at the same time the same thing. So it's like this transgressive experience, I don't know, through the cinema or whatever. And so like that experience, we have something that actually is good for the first time, even though the movie was bad, but it worked. And ever since, I was like trying to kind of replicate whatever that feeling was. Like you're chasing the high, and ironically, my movies—I don't even—it's not about jokes anymore. I don't really know what they are. I've become more and more confused. And it's like I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna do something more mainstream, and it just gets weirder.
Yeah. It's insane. Like you're a crazy person.
And just so you guys know, we are playing a clip to close this panel of his newest film.
Assassinat.
And then I guess you guys will be the judge. Kevin, we'll finish this round of questions with you. Because at this point, you have Picture Lock, and the show, I mean, it's not a variety show, but it's like a film, you're critiquing films, and you're giving reviews and stuff like that. I mean, what's the success on that? So, you're like, I really made that movie look bad. Is that what they were?
So, I have a show, it's Picture Lock, picturelockshow.com. So, I'm a DC area film critic, as well as the Rosebud Film Festival director. Rosebud is open exclusively to DC, Maryland, and Virginia. Filmmakers,
it's a great fest.
No, but I definitely suggest you guys put your films in. It's the only, like, I don't know another festival that gives $1,000 prizes to the top five finalists.
And also, Rosebud Film Festival, even though it's a local festival, it's really nationwide known, so it's like there's a lot of credibility. So if you guys want to enter.
I appreciate this.
Down at VCU, I had fantastic teachers, and they're internationally well-known filmmakers. They're always constantly entered the Rosebud Film Festival.
Well, it's a really legit film.
No, so for me, I think thinking of the indie filmmaker, one of the things that I think a lot of times indie filmmakers don't think about is not only completing your film, but what's going to happen afterwards. And so, as a critic, I'll give you a couple secrets and hints, I think. One, with about every large major city, there is like a film critic association. If you have a film, you need to email someone at that, you know, for us, it's the Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association. Say, hey, I got this film. Can any of you guys check it out? Because if you get some film critics behind you, you start to get reviews, different buzz. Buzz is something that you definitely need. Even from the film festival perspective, if you're on the circuit, you know, like Jay's film, it went to Northern Virginia Film Festival, racked up a whole bunch of accolades. And so once you see as a film festival director, this film needs to be checked out because, you know, it's doing well in other festivals or it's getting great reviews, then you want to check out that film and you want to get your hands on it even more. So I think, I don't know, for me personally, just as like a film critic, sometimes it's a matter of like, where's this film been? Where is it going? And the buzz surrounding it. And I hate to say that, but it's true because if you only make a film that's going to be seen in your mom's basement, then what's the point? And you might want to just make a film for, you know, cathartic reasons, but I think that you got to get eyeballs on it, you got to get reviews, and those are some of the ways that you can do it.
All right, so let's open the floor. Don't use this mic. I'm just, if you raise your hand, I'm calling you.
Anybody?
You got a question?
Hey, what's up,
yeah,
man?
Just kind of follow up on what you were saying, how you made some films and then you're like, what is this? You hear writers talk a lot about how characters will do things they don't expect. So I was wondering, the filmmakers on the panel, have you finished a product and then thought, this is completely different from what I expected I was going to make, and it just kind of goes off and takes its own trajectory? Does that happen like when it happens with authors?
All the time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It always changes. It always evolves.
Yeah.
They say films are made in three-step process, what you write, what you shoot, and then what you edit. So it's never the same. Go ahead, Jesse.
Well, I think the other thing is filmmaking is like the most collaborative medium. Everyone's bringing something. At least I think when it works well, you know, everyone's bringing something to the project. And so, you know, when you go in, even as a, because I write, like when I came up, I wrote, direct, and edited everything. But then I would collaborate with actors, with cinematographers, with production designers, art, and they're
editors.
All editors. Yeah. Well, yeah. After, and now I'm collaborating.
Yeah,
I work with editors. But before, so it's like you're working with, you know, on Try. I came in to an idea, and then the producer had this idea, hired me. I wound up doing a rewrite on the script, and then directed it, and I worked with an editor. And where the film started and where it ended up were two. We were restructuring the entire film in the edit. Moving things around and we were able to do that because of things that the actors brought to it, because of things that the cinematographer brought to it, because of ideas that the editor brought to it. So I think the collaborative aspect of it, where you have everyone, the key to good directing is getting everyone on the same page tonally, so that you're not getting something that's like totally crazy, where one person thinks it's a completely different movie than the other person, and you're kind of fighting each other. But it definitely shifts because of the nature of there being so many hands that go into making the film, and so many artists.
Well, Drew, you can say something about like Assassina, what you started and what you ended up with.
Yeah, because I mean, there's other things like technical and money resources. As you're going, you won't have what you wrote.
Yeah.
Like in Assassina, there's supposed to be like, you know, a giant space suit astronaut monster thing, and it was pretty clear that we weren't going to have it in time, so I had to kind of rewrite around the things that we didn't have. And you also don't want the movie to suck at the same time, so you have to constantly come up with solutions. And it's really, it's every day and kind of every moment when you're on set that I like to be surprised. Like, I don't like to know what the actors are gonna do. I don't really talk to actors very much, like, unless they have specific questions, but I don't really wanna get into what they do because I like to not really know and then go from there. And then if it's not what I want, I say vague things to them to get them to change. But I mean, every actor's different though.
What's the example of a vague? Do you have a...
Oh, well, in...
It's like...
In Science Team, the best one was... It was, I would just, because everybody's like freaking out the whole movie and they're screaming. So I'd be like, you know, can you go bigger? Can you go bigger? Yeah, do it again, can you go bigger? And then I'm like, can you do like a crazy take? And so that crazy take became like the like 11 of just insanity. But it was kind of like the moment where like everything goes out the window and the actor can just do whatever they want. And some of the best stuff came from that. Because I mean, it's like you have to interpret what you're saying in their own way. And ultimately you should hire actors that's why you hire them, because what their instincts are. It's like the essence of what you want is in them. So basically whatever they do instinctually is like gonna be pretty good, but then you get them to do a bunch of different versions and then you can choose it in the edit. So that's the other thing, it's a movie. You can do things 20 times if you have the time. So giving yourself options as you go is like the best thing to do.
Any other questions? In the back, yeah.
There's also Dragonuck is a big resource locally in like the Delmarva area.
Sometimes Virginia Film Hotline.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mandy. But I would recommend, you know, it's kind of a longer way. It's kind of a harder process. But have you thought about meeting up with like casting directors and casting agents and things like that? If only just to maybe like get your foot in the door and start off as an extra or something, or featured player or something.
I mean, backstage works.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had casting directors put people on backstage and then we hired them through backstage. I think you had to pay for it, but we definitely hired actors from that.
Yeah. I would recommend, you know, casting the widest net possible, you know, and then seeing where it goes. And I think the hardest part is initially getting your foot in the door.
Right.
Yeah, and then if you show promise and if you show talent to the individual people, like casting directors or whatever, or, you know, a production company, I think, you know, it'll go a long way. But yeah, it is very hard in the DC area. It's a tough racket here. It's very, you know, it's a politics-oriented city. And there's not a huge room for, you know, like narrative stuff. It might be commercials and things, but
yeah.
I don't know why I'm looking at you.
I mean,
because I feel like I need to gravitate my eyes over you. Yeah.
I also look at the Virginia Film Office website, and the Virginia Production Alliance is also kind of like a lobbying group, but they're very actor-centric. That's not based out of here, that's in Richmond, but it's for the whole state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I've sensed that separation since I've worked away from Richmond. I was like, oh, so Northern Virginia is not part of that section.
It is. It does feel kind of weird because you got Northern Virginia that feels like it's part of D.C. Then you got, you know, Central Virginia, which is that Petersburg, Richmond area that feels like its own weird island. Then you have Norfolk area and Virginia Beach area. That's a whole different.
That's a whole different thing.
So you got different sections of things that they're technically all Virginia, but are very different from each other.
Every year they have like an industry, people in the industry meeting.
State of the industry.
State of the industry.
Yeah. That's a good place to go network.
Everybody goes. It's people that are making stuff and it's actors, so you can actually meet the production companies.
Right.
Yeah.
I would definitely like the casting director thing.
I used to go when it was up here. No,
oh, they don't have it up here?
They don't have it up here.
Oh, yeah. That was like in 2009, 2010. Yeah, 10, 9, 8, something. Those are the good years where like they actually had giant convention centers. They had 35, 40 small local production companies, right? And they would all like, you know, advertise themselves, and then sometimes actors would give cards to the production companies and they'll hire them for like a small local commercial or something bigger, or like one of those recreation shows, historical recreation shows. A lot of them are that.
And festivals, I mean, also directly meeting filmmakers.
Oh, that's good.
Is a good thing.
Yeah, it's
like I've hired people just because I knew them.
Basically. Yeah.
Yep.
I would also say specific to Washington, D.C., because we're getting a lot of Virginia talk, but the Made in D.C. Collective, as well as the Creative D.C., they have a lot of really good mixers and things like that. So if you're just looking, you know, talking about how D.C. is a very political city, but I think that once you figure out how to scratch the surface and find that creative vein, it is there. It's just the issue of it is tough to scratch that surface. So those are two kind of groups that I would look at, as well as the D.C. Film Alliance, that do have mixers, do have a lot of events. So if you're just looking you know, to network and kind of just get your feet wet and lay down some roots. Those are also good, more local, non-Virginia assets.
Also, women in film.
Oh, yeah, women in film video is
very
amazing.
Very active in DC area.
Yeah, push for it.
Yeah,
I think that's the hardest part. I think people get discouraged very easily. So,
you.
I want to touch on what you just said about women in film, director-wise, because I know there's been a lot of that. And if you see the Oscars, like Catherine Bigelow is the only one. How do you guys feel about that?
Well,
landmine.
I'll just say, like, for me, I was just in this last week. This they have this Shoot Magazine emerging new director showcase, and there were 33 of us, and I think there were like 14 or 15 women, and the work they were doing is just amazing. So it's from what I've seen, it's not great still, but like there are a lot of initiatives that have been pushed, and there are a lot of the cinematographer on Try was a woman DP as well. So that, like, there's a new collective of women cinematographers that are coming together to push their message, and there are just a lot of collectives of you know, it's about banding together and just making stuff. I'm probably the wrong person to be speaking about this.
Well, no, but also isn't like. For a long time, females. A lot of female directors, potential directors, and writers and filmmakers are discouraged, and I think now they're finally feeling.
I mean, film culture, the way a set is run, is a very macho male bullshit.
It is.
It's just kind of the culture. It's shitty. I mean, it can be better, but like you meet these older people, there's things that I've heard on sensory, like, why would you say that to someone, and things like that, and I don't know, I guess it comes from kind of more the Hollywood way of doing things, or the union way of how it's supposed to be exclusionary, but irregardless, because people want to kind of protect their jobs, and so the way the culture works is very insulated, and then it's also racist, and it's also
pretty racist.
I will say this, and you've probably heard this before, but no one is coming to save you. No one cares about your stories. You're going to have to make it happen. As a female director, as someone who started my own production committees, someone who started a film festival, a lot of the reasons why I did that was because I was sitting around bitching about why isn't this way, why doesn't this exist, until if you keep bitching and bitching and bitching, after a certain point you figure, you know what, I there's no excuse but for me not to do it, you know? Obviously there's a need, let me create this. There needs to be something that's a little bit more inclusive of all of the people who are being excluded. And in terms of the way that, yes, we've seen a little bit of change, but I'm just gonna tell you that when I was in, I might get in trouble for saying this, but I think it's important. When I was in grad school, one of my professors at Columbia, who is a very, very wonderful producer who has done a lot of movies that I'm sure everyone here has seen, I remember at one point he turned to another professor and was like, why are all of these women here in grad school? Like, don't they all know that they're not going to be directors and producers? They're all going to end up being script girls? And I was kind of like, damn. That just got said in front of us, you know?
But I will say this. Script supervising is a really hard job. And it's very hard.
Yeah.
Mainly because I have a friend and she does a sure turn.
No, not to knock it, but let's also be fair that we didn't use the term
script supervisor,
not script girl, right? None of these women are going to be producers or directors. They're all going to be script girls. I mean, this is just so antiquated in its thinking, but unfortunately still exists. So that's something that you're just definitely going to have to fight the entire time. And I think I'm going to keep bringing it back to why I really, really love the digital sphere. Is because I think that it's a place where you, A, don't need to be in New York or LA. You can be, and this is part of the DC Web Fest, like the amazing content that gets submitted to our film festival. It's not coming from New York or LA. It's coming from the middle of nowhere in Oklahoma, or a small town in Spain, or Korea, or wherever. And it is being made, like these things are being made by women telling stories about women, or, you know, whether it's minorities who don't get represented. Like, we all, I think, at some base level want to look up on the screen and see ourselves or see a story that relates to us and not just see, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
I want to see that movie.
I do. It's got Krang in it.
Give Krang a chance.
But no, I mean, and don't get me wrong, I go see every X-Men movie, but I'm just saying that there is more to be had. Yeah. And the unfortunate thing is that no one is coming to save you, but dig in deep, lean in, and, you know, connect with as many people as possible, because honestly, like what you were saying about this being a collaborative medium, is something that helps someone in your network. You know, what's the saying about how does it rising sea
lifts
all boats? That's completely true. And one thing that I would never encourage is never any sort of, like, support the other women in your group always because of that thinking. It's not like there's only one chair at the table and we all need to fight each other to the death gladiator style for it. There can be more chairs. And maybe next year there will be two women here.
But I mean, can't you apply?
So I think the biggest thing that I think in terms of being any kind of filmmaker, right, is just be undeniable. And on top of that, stick to your own voice, because that's what really comes through and people gravitate to. Because sometimes you feel like you're on an island and you're the only one that thinks that way, but so many people do. I think I was at Tribeca this year, and I was talking to Amanda Michelli, and she's an Oscar-nominated director. And one of the things that she was saying is just, like, because I asked that same question, and she was just saying, like, stick to your voice, you know? And then from there, just put in the work, put in the effort, and things will start to happen. You think about, like, Ava DuVernay, right? Like, she just started out, but she was making amazing films that had her own unique voice. And now people are like, hey, we want you to direct Black Panther, you know, like be with the big boys now. So I think that's the thing. And it's not necessarily chasing after the dream of becoming, like, on a Spielberg level, but it's like chasing the dream of being yourself and getting your voice out there. And like I said, being undeniable.
She, by the way, she's directing A Wrinkle in Time now.
Yeah.
You've read that book. It's fucking awesome.
So you have a question?
So good. I was curious, especially the cinematographer, but everybody, can you give me one or two methodologies you've used to make it not look like home movies without using $1,000 camera, make it look like home movies when you want to do that, like, instead of just playing with, you know, film versus digital or what film quality you're using, tips, tricks you've used to modify your base of the story you're telling?
I think two things. First, observation of light. You have to figure out when you're observing individual characters or people or places, what light looks great. I think a lot of people just shoot at any time of the day, but when I'm shooting a movie, like outdoors, I never shoot anything after 10 a.m. and then I come back to shoot stuff after 3 to 4 p.m. because the sun, when it's overhead, everything just ends up having raccoon eyes. It's like, it's disgusting. I'm serious. From an aesthetic standpoint, it is disgusting, and if you want to have, if you want to not use any lights and be really smart about it, you figure out the angle of the sun. There's like a lot of apps for that. Figure out, like, do you want to be backlit, frontlit, sidelit? I don't know. I mean, whatever taste you want to, you know, push for, and then you just shoot at that time of day at that location that looks appropriate for your story. And then also, film versus digital, blah blah blah, that doesn't matter, because it's just, you know, at the end of the day,
film is dead. I'm sorry,
it's coming back, but it's still dead. It's on life support. Well, it's on life support until the end of time.
It's for the elite now. It's for rich people. It's not for us.
When you watch some stuff, you can see a very clear visual difference between this looks like it was somebody's home movie, this looks like it's like reality television, and this looks like it's professional, like, edited. And some people, personally, I've filmed all three intentionally, but it was a bunch of post-edit work to do that.
I mean, you can't really shortcut your way around it. It has to be hard work, and cameras, and crew, and grip and lighting gear,
yeah,
there's no way to get around it. It's like you either do the hard way or you just end up getting home movies. So
I mean, there's definitely cameras that people use for like documentaries that have like a really good dynamic range and they're good for shooting.
Yeah, but that's still money. That's still like money that you can't. Yeah.
It's like you always have to weigh the cost versus what it can do. But I mean, a phone can do all the really good stuff now.
Yeah, but then you need the crew,
yeah,
and you need the locations and the production design to kind of make it all bloom together.
Yeah. I'm going to take one more question.
Do you guys work with permits? Like, if you want to go shoot somewhere, do you guys just do guerrilla style? I know you guys have a group of people to go with you, so I'm assuming you guys have permits.
Permits in this area?
Wherever you shoot, like if you outdoors, indoors.
If it's not a large populated city like here, you can kind of get away with it if you wanted to. I mean, they'll call you out on it, and then you might have to move away from location to location. But you can probably do guerrilla style. DC, very different. No. DC, you put sticks on there, you're fucked.
Yeah, I would argue in favor of permits if you can, just because a lot of film offices are very helpful to filmmakers, and permits aren't. And it's one less thing to stress out about.
They'll block parking for you too.
They'll block parking for you. They'll give you a whole, like, it's just a matter of time. Just knowing what you want to do far enough in advance to start talking to them and getting the permits in. Most of them are not expensive and worth it. And like I said, you've plenty to stress out about. When you're shooting a film, getting shut down before you can get the shot shouldn't necessarily be one of them. I had a very interesting permit situation with Tri. We filmed at the Nation's Triathlon, which takes place in the national parks. So the National Park Service is notoriously difficult when it comes to permitting. And so we had the buy-in from the race, and they were helping us and stuff. But we had this whole plan. So we were filming actors in an actual triathlon with 4,000 athletes and 20,000 spectators and people around the monuments. So like it was a crazy like military operation. And we found out the day before that shoot, we found out on Friday, the triathlon was on Sunday. We found out, so the day before our tech scout, which was Saturday, that we were only able to get like, I think, half of what we asked for and that we were planning for. So we had to pull, you know, pretty much an all-nighter after a day of filming the movie, pull an all-nighter to redo all of our plans to get what we needed to get at the Nation's Triathlon. We were permitted we asked for, I think, 10 cameras and crews for that day, and we were given 5. So then we actually wound up with 14 cameras, but we, like, only technically 5. We had some people undercover.
So you bent the rules.
We bent the rules a little bit, but we were allowed 5 crews. So that's what we had, like, 5 cameras with crews, but then we'd sent some other people out.
So you had ops, you had operators.
We had operators just kind of floating around in the space. But I think permits, you know, film offices are very helpful. Like that, get to know your film office. They just want to help you make films.
Oh yeah, developing relationship with the film office.
Develop a relationship with the film office as you're getting started, because they just want to help you make films. That's what they're there for.
They might ask if you have insurance or not, though.
The production and liability insurance.
That's one thing, which you should have.
Yeah.
But there's one time when I was making the team, it was my first movie, and we had no money, and I called, and they were like, "Do you have insurance?" And I was like, "No." And I was like, "Well, we want to shoot in this park," and he's like, whoever it was like, "Just do it. We're not going to do anything."
Yeah, but you shot in Richmond, and you can pretty much shoot anything in Richmond, and you get away with anything there.
Yeah. But thank you guys so much. I thought it was amazing.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for staying out so late. Drive home safe.
Well, that was the Awesome Filmmakers Making It Happen panel. Thanks for listening. And Joe, I just want to salute you there and say that you have been doing a great job by putting the filmmaker panel together every year at AwesomeCon.
That's cool. I don't need anyone sucking up to me, but I do appreciate my own hard work too, because every time I see people come out there and enjoy the stuff I put out there, that's actually the only thanks I need. That's all I need. But also, I want to say thank you to Drew, to Otessa, to Calvin, Jay, to Kevin, to Cooney, delivering an awesome panel that I think people will absolutely love. I enjoyed it. I was entertained and also very, 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 very much, you know, informed, like I do. I mean, it's amazing. You know, filmmaking is one of those art forms, literally, very much like professional wrestling. Once you do it, you really find out if you really want to do this or not. Because you know what? It's neither easy nor hard nor challenging, but it's definitely work. And definitely, if you're willing to put the work into it, if you're willing to sacrifice, if you're willing to put your passion, and if you have something to say, filmmaking is the art form that I think everyone should do. It's not really, there's the high potential of, you know, making lots of money, but again, that is something where it comes to any other property or any other licensing or anything else that, you know, with marketing and all that stuff. But it all starts with having a little spark, and I think that's what having this panel is all about, is inspiring that spark. And inspiring people to understand that, like, you know, like, hard work is good. Hard work is always good. That's what I think. So, again, I a massive thank you to everyone who was on the panel, and a massive thank you to everyone who showed stuff on the panel exclusively at the Awesome Filmmakers panel that you can't see or hear anything else, because you're definitely not going to hear it on this panel, on this podcast. You're not going to hear it here. You got to go there live. And just like anything else, do it live. That's what we do. Right, Carolyn?
Yes, we're live and in action. And you can catch Joe on his website. It's joecarabeo.com. You also have astrayproductions.com, which is the maker of this podcast. And you can find Joe online at AstrayJ. That is his handle, at AstrayJ. And you can find me online, too, under at Carolyn Bilewski. Just using my name. That's also my URL, and I also have a webcomic called Curls. It's curls-studio.com/curls. So please check that out, and check out all the lovely items that we make for you at the comic shows. We're going to be touring in the fall. We're going to be at Small Press Expo. We're going to be at Baltimore Comic Con, and we're going to be at New York Comic Con, the big, big deal East Coast comic convention at booth 1162. Yes, we will be out in the fall time, pimping our comics and telling the world what we make. Joe.
That's me.
And I'm Carolyn. And thank you for listening to the Carolyn and Joe Show. Always remember, you're bona fide.